Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Frankenstein Syndrome, whatever that is. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey!
Hey!
Hello, everybody. My geek things!
My God, it's another episode of Geeks On.
Welcome
no,
back.
It's not. No? Oh, right. That's right. I wasn't here. You guys were here. So, you're... Okay,
there's nothing geeky at all about this podcast.
Okay, fine. We've decided... Are we now going to be Jocks On? Are we switching? Is that our Halloween costume?
Hey, welcome to Jocks On.
I was wondering why Peter was just wearing the jock today.
I'm Matt. I'm a pole vaulter.
Yeah, people said they would have listened to actually that show. We should just tell those guys to do their own podcast.
I would so not listen to that. I'm sorry.
Well, no, but
no, but
other people would.
Oh yeah,
if they
I'm sure
listen to podcasts. I'm actually missing that segment of DNA. So, like, when people start quoting stats at me, I think that information was used for all my Dungeons and Dragons knowledge.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
no, I'm sorry. It actually, like, when I watch. It can be the most amazing sports movie about, you know, like maybe 5% of the movie is actually about sports and the rest is like the most moving human drama ever written.
Brian's Song.
Yeah.
Hoosiers.
Flatline in my head. I just don't care. Like, yeah, sure, he's losing his
Hoosiers?
Mom, but he's a boxer.
How about Rocky? You Rocky? So absolutely.
Flatline.
Really?
Hoosiers is awesome.
Flatline.
Oh,
you know, this
on.
Is, I think this
Bull
is,
Durham, flatline.
It's all the abuse that we got from jocks as kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
I actually went to a nerdocracy in my high school.
Like, did you really?
Yeah, the nerds rule. If you weren't smart, we treated you like you were the nerd, you know? It was like,
how dare you?
Like, there was this guy in our
way
class.
Way to jump high, Johnny.
There was this guy in our class who, like, was the best athlete. He was probably the most physically attractive guy in our class, but not the brightest apple in the barrel, so to speak. Really just not Mr. Popularity.
So you grew up in China?
Mm. Yes.
God. No wonder the public school thought we were so weird.
How's your geek week?
Well, the video game onslaught has begun, as we all know.
Aaron will now be played by Tattoo from Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
The game!
I got Dead Space first. Because
did get it.
I wanted that scary horror thing for the holidays.
Thumbs up, thumbs down?
It's pretty good. There's nothing new to it. So it's just done well. Like, there's nothing... You're not going to experience any type of new gameplay or new type of shooter experience here. You're just going to find your shooter done well.
Okay.
And...
did you get Far Cry 2 yet?
No, but man...
It looks interesting.
The map maker alone, the multiplayer map maker looks freaking awesome.
Right.
I mean, it seems like endless multiplayer maps being made. I did, though, get Fable 2.
Okay.
And I've started Fable 2.
I have too.
I'm probably about only
you
about...
You bought it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Can you play more than
two people multiplayer?
No. And the multiplayer is a little weird. The co-op... Well, first of all, if you're just playing the single player, you can see your buddies running around.
Well, I just love that your dog is your sort of...
It works really well,
Igor-like
too.
Igor-like companion.
I've been actually pretty happy because you know how, like, in all of these games, you always have to sort of, okay, I've turned left, I find myself in a large cavern, I see an exit over there, but I have to stop to scour the cavern.
Right.
Because, you know, there might be stuff that I might like.
Right.
Your dog does it for you, for the most part.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You kind of have to, though, lead him to...
Well, apparently you level up your dog as you go through.
Yeah.
And he becomes better and better at
scouting.
Becoming aware of his environment. And
I heard you can
things.
Kick him.
Probably,
you can
if you're evil.
You can scold him. You can do all sorts of stuff.
I mean, I'm going Mr. Squeaky Clean my first time.
Guess what? I've decided I don't do this normally. Every time I do a role-playing game, I play good. I'm going evil in this one.
Okay, kick the dog.
I'm not going to... No, I'm being good to my dog because he helps.
I want person who's nice to me.
I'm going to play Mr. Saintly Man, and then I'm going to play Miss Demonic Demon.
Oh, you think you're going to play it through twice?
If it's good enough, I will.
Well, yeah. See... the reason why that's not going to happen is because Fallout 3 comes out next week.
Yeah, but you know what? I own the game. I can play it a year from now.
Next year, Fallout 5 is not
going to... I freaking missed your game monogamy, man. It's true. My heart belongs to one game at a time. I'm not some game slut. Yeah, I noticed.
You're still on Dead or Alive 2 or whatever.
No, Soul Calibur. Soul Calibur.
You're like a year behind the times,
Soul Calibur ate my life.
I am?
You are a year behind the times, sir.
Soul Calibur ate my life.
And a little bit of Soul Calibur news for everybody out there. Darth Vader is now available for download.
Which I didn't know, and now I feel...
And he's cool.
PlayStation can download Yoda, and Xbox can download Darth. Is that the
maybe
deal?
Maybe the PlayStation can. I don't care. I don't know anyone who cares. But, the 360, you can get
But it costs money.
Cool. Yeah,
it's 400 like credits. I mean,
$500. I mean, $5 for one character? That's the dumbest fucking thing I've heard.
I don't care. It's Darth Vader.
It's fun.
I can see, force
you have to
people.
Stop. You have to stop feeding into this $5 for one character. Bullshit.
I want Darth Vader.
Me too.
Stop the madness. This is the reason why they can charge $5.
The reason why they can charge $5 is because the licensing alone for that darn character is probably costing them three of the five.
He has force powers, Aaron.
Okay, whatever.
He shoots force powers.
I read an early review of Fallout.
Oh.
And, you know, apparently someone kind of got a hacked version that they shouldn't have had type of situation. They said it was a little eerily too reminiscent of Oblivion.
They said I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, they said it's not a terrible thing. They just said it was just a little bit too much like playing Oblivion where they just did a different skin.
I see.
And, you know, that there were some small differences, but that...
But it's not a dramatic.
You're like talking
difference.
To the same guy. Well, you're probably going to go through and be like, "I talked to this guy."
What's, yeah,
that's weird.
Isn't that Wonder Woman's voice?
Yeah,
yeah. I can see. I can see already. You know, that wouldn't surprise me as a comment. Mm.
I actually ended up doing a voiceover for the new video game Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen
this
some.
Thing is going to be so massive, it's unreal. It is an amazing game, at least from the voiceover side. They have way too many characters who have way too many options in the way they talk.
So, yeah, I've seen some of the new clips. They've been running a lot of like PR right now for like the preview stuff, so
yeah. And if anybody decides to beat up a dwarf character in the game, like getting into a scuffle with a dwarf merchant, I put a little Geeks On reference in there I don't know if it'll make it into the final game, but I put it in there and they laughed. So
you can't tell us what the reference
is. I won't tell what it
you?
Is. No,
you have to tell us the reference.
I'll tell you guys off mic.
It's, an Easter egg.
Yeah, exactly.
You mean you won't tell us because of your non-disclosure?
Right, I won't tell you guys at all. Sorry, you guys can't know.
He always makes these promises and he never delivers. Damn you.
Any other video games or geeky shiat?
Geeky this shiat? Week? Well, we can just jump into my news story, which is sort of a geeky thing.
Well, I had one last bit of news. I'm having a baby geek.
No!
Yay!
Matt is having a baby geek. There's going to be a new baby geek in the woiks.
Oh my god, they're multiplying! Ah! Yeah.
Matt is first to breed.
Yeah, level zero character. Charisma 20.
Please do not take it as a sign of disrespect when I do not hold your child because he only has one hit point.
Exactly.
I'm scared. I'm scared of
it's
holding
true.
A one
I'm
hit point entity.
I'm actually nervous about holding my kid. It's gonna happen. So, you know.
The hit points, you level up fast. It's true.
Next thing you know, they're at least 18, 19th level and stealing your car. You
exactly.
Yikes.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yay.
Thank you.
And one quick plug for my work. The Igor games are well out on the market now. And
this is going in hand in glove, as it were, with the
Igor
with the
movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, do you have a horse Ubisoft game out?
No, that's somebody else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because they released like two horse
Ubisoft
games.
That's your other friend, Don.
No, we do have a couple Ubisoft games coming out soon, though.
Oh, okay.
They're all vet titles.
So. Oh, okay.
And later this year, my next wave of games are going to be the new Paramount games based on Pretty in Pink, Clueless, and Mean Girls. And the designs of them are pretty darn good right now, if I do say so myself. So,
excellent.
Give those a shot when they come out.
All right.
Awesome.
Peter. Plug!
Okay, so actually, what one of the things that I have done recently in my news story is basically I went and saw a movie called Splinter, a horror film, which I'm going to review as my news story.
Okay.
And sort of full disclosure is I actually know one of the writers on this. Ian Shore is my writing partner, and he was one of the writers on this.
Cool.
So,
wow, that got made quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, he has that type of thing happen around him.
Wow.
So, first of all, let me tell you a little bit about Splinter. I'm going to pass around a poster so you guys can see what that looks like. And basically the concept of this film is it's about three people, two campers who are out in the woods. They pick up a pair of hitchhikers, sort of not because they want to, but because these people have guns and say, you're going to take us with you. And they, one of them is an escaped convict, and then his girlfriend, who is sort of coming off of drugs. Okay. And they're trying to get out of the country. And these people decide that they're going, you know, as they're trying to get away, they run over this animal that screws up the car, and so they have to go to the nearest gas station to kind of get the car fixed up. And when they arrive at the gas station, there is this creature, which
porcupine.
Yeah, it's one of these things that infects people, and it basically makes them look like they've got these little quills that come out of them when they get infected by it. They become sort of
splintery.
Yeah, and if you get even a tiny sliver of the creature in you, you suddenly become infected and will.
I guess naming the movie Spiky just really wouldn't have.
No,
had
it didn't sell as well.
No, it didn't work
the
out.
The porcupine.
You know, yeah. Porcupine of Doom was already taken. Yes. So you know, but
Pointy Man.
Ironically, this will be the second porcupine person I've ever seen in a horror movie.
What was the first?
Nightbreed, Porcupine.
Right. Of course,
she was amazing.
That's true.
Or Hellraiser, if you think about it.
Well, yeah, sort of. But those aren't those sort of porcupines they're, in reverse?
They're pins, yeah.
And they're pointed inwards.
Right.
This is the debut feature film of Toby Wilkins, who has mostly made his name before by doing special effects. I actually thought the film was quite good. It reminded me of the best of John Carpenter films.
Fun.
Say, movies like The Thing. It's very kind of old school in the special effects, you know, in sort of a John Carpenter style. There's not any digital effects in this, as far as I can tell.
As a side note, that makes me very happy. I really miss that style of special effect. I think it's fun.
Don't get me started.
Aaron with the scowly face.
So, you know, I was, you know, a little leery, as you always are when you see a movie with a first-time director. You never know what you're getting yourself into. But I thought it was well-paced, well-directed. I definitely jumped, you know, and was a little embarrassed by jumping out of my seat a couple times.
Especially when the splinter came out of his face.
Yeah.
I'm lying.
But, you know, my only critique, I think this is actually a really solidly directed, well-put-together piece. My only critique of it would be that it's not really breaking any new ground here. You know, we've seen movies like this before, but so I would say, you know, it's a type of movie we've seen, but it's done very, very well.
So its greatest plus is also its greatest minus, that it harkens back to an age of this type of film also.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay.
It harkens back to it without revivifying it.
Exactly. It's not, you know, changing the rules in any way. It's not rewriting.
It's just done well.
But it's done very, it's still done
well,
very
good.
Well.
I mean, it's fine.
Sure. I can live with that.
I thought the writing was very good, barring two moments. There's two things that happen. The first being that there's...
Well, don't blow the two moments.
No, come on.
we can blame them.
Spoiler alert. He's blowing them.
Okay. Well, there's two moments in the film that I thought were, you know, a little awkward. I won't blow them because we don't want to ruin it for Don.
Spoiler alert.
But they're fairly early on in the film.
Okay.
Which is good.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really believable.
Get your mistakes
moments
out of the way in the first half.
Yeah. They're fairly early on in the film, and then the movie gets its groove and starts moving along, and it works very well.
Excellent.
It's always so nice to be able to go see a friend's work and really enjoy it. Like, that's a really happy thing.
Yeah.
Like last night when we saw Peter's wife perform.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, figure out a way to...
In Family of Man in North Hollywood?
In Family of Man in North Hollywood?
At the Secret Rose Theater?
Which just sounds like a euphemism for female body parts.
Yeah.
Well, I have to go see more shows there.
The Secret Rose Theater.
So, the creature design is one of the standouts of the film. I think the creature design is really interesting. It's very creepy. It's something I haven't seen before. These sort of long porcupine-like quills that start to, you know, come out of the bodies are really kind of creepy. I mean, you know, this
and that none of that's done digitally. It seems like it would have.
No, it's all done. None of it's
animatronic.
Digital. Wow,
as far as I can tell. Right. I mean, it doesn't look digital to me. You know, but,
well, that doesn't mean.
Well, but I mean, most of the time, most of the effects in here look like they're old school effects. Right. You know?
Cool. Speaking of which, it's been a while. Did I mention Walking with Dinosaurs last time I was on?
No.
Okay, I saw it. Awesome, animatronic, incredible. Yeah. I saw a Tyrannosaurus Rex right in front of me. Badass. Go see Walking with Dinosaurs. Any chance you get, go see it. Sorry, enough. Plug done.
Plug me.
Sorry, Don.
Cast does a pretty good job. I think it's good, you know.
Excellent.
And it's coming out in theaters?
It's coming out October 31st in limited release.
Okay. All right.
Splinter.
But it will be on DVD for sure at some point. That's how they make it.
Splinter.
Nice.
Better than Species 3.
But, well, but I know it doesn't take much.
The opening couldn't hope to approach that masterful work.
Right. So there's an article that I thought was interesting. I'm not going to go really into the whole thing, but it's a really, really interesting thing that basically says the U.S. digital deficiency, we have a digital deficiency, jeopardizes our superpower status.
That's the only thing that jeopardizes our... The fact that we're, number 40th in education and well, number 80th in our life expectancy.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what the beginning of this says. Children born in America this year will be the first true digital natives of the information age. They'll grow up in a time when all their telecommunication tools, video, voice, data, are basically completely based upon digital technology. It's an interesting historical footnote, to be sure, but it made me wonder, what will be their rights as digital citizens of the United States? Does our public policy contemplate a future constrained by the agendas of big business, or will it position America to truly prosper in the global information economy? An average broadband connection in the United States is 1.5 megabits download and 768 kilobytes upload, about enough speed to watch a fairly low resolution streaming video or do some casual web surfing.
Lame.
Right. Now, a child born in Korea or Singapore this year will be a digital native of their respective countries. They'll grow up in a time when all their telecommunications tools, same thing. But they're very likely to see their journey start through the internet with 100 megabit download and upload. Now, we have this massive deficiency in terms of download and upload speed by which we access the biggest information network on the planet. And what this article basically goes into is that information is currency, as we're seeing, you know, on a daily basis as the stock market tumbles every day. Does this mean that we're truly, truly jeopardizing our status as a superpower because of it?
Does it matter if we jeopardize our status as a superpower, by the way? Remember when everyone picked up Microsoft because they were like the big daddy of companies, and then they've kind of fallen and everyone's left them alone? It'd be nice to kind of be left alone.
Well, I
not
I
be a
less,
superpower.
I care less about our losing our status as a superpower as so much as I care about the fact that we are losing the quality of life that's supposed to come with it.
Right. Yeah.
So right now, we're the superpower, but our quality of life, comparatively speaking, has gone the way of the dodo.
Well, the thing that also fascinates me is that everybody's talking about Singapore and Beijing and Shanghai as being these absolute cities of the future. That if you go there, it feels like Blade Runner. It feels like, you know, hey, New York, that was a nice, cute place back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering whether, I mean, and the economic boom that are going on in these places are fueled by information technology and the fact that, you know, they're you know, buying up our dollars. So I don't know. Read the article. The article is fascinating, and it really brings up some really interesting questions.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Huh?
Groovy.
Quick thing about what you were just saying, though. Mm-hmm. Part of what I wonder when we talk about internet speeds, you know, when we compare to places that are relatively small, you know, like, for example, Japan probably has much faster internet speeds.
Right.
You know, but they've got a higher population density from what I understand.
Much.
You know, so it makes sense that you know, when you're trying to get the internet to reach that way. But when you look at the average internet out here, I mean, we're stretching all the way across the United States. Our infrastructure is so much huger, and yet we've got to go through all these large areas with a,
yeah, but wouldn't you then expect that in
at least in New York,
right? In New York, or population centers would have,
but and they do tend to have faster internet in those places. We just also make it prohibitively expensive. Right. Is the only problem.
But think about it. I mean, it really has to do with probably that some like the Korean. It's probably a government pipeline, and we've got companies here who are putting the stranglehold so they can really slowly release bandwidth and charge us every bit that trickles through. They don't want to upgrade because it costs money, so they're going to try to drag this out, because if they just open up the floodwaters, what are they going to do 5 years from now?
You know,
they're not going to be able to charge more.
The funny thing is they can charge as much as they want, pretty much.
Yeah.
But the laws of capitalism, in theory, say that we should be getting the higher connections in so that somebody can try and get our business for that.
Right.
The problem is the current sort of megaplex of the suppliers. Yeah, it would cost $1 billion to implement the new technology, but they could just fight somebody else from implementing it for $100,000.
Right, but what are our rights as sort of digital citizens of the United States in terms of this is the community in which we interact?
But you don't have a right to get a high bit rate.
Yeah, I agree.
You have a right to a clean phone signal. I mean,
you don't have a right to any of that stuff.
That's not a right.
Well, here's
the
thing.
You have a right to, like...
A lot of this comes from...
What the
hell? Let me just describe what I'm talking about here. Basically, a lot of the problems that we have in this country comes from the fact that we don't really have a full capitalistic model, because what we need in order to do that is to really make sure that there's competition, which means lots of players in the game.
I see lots of big AT&Ts.
So Peter's got sort of a weird free-mindy flowchart of...
What I've got is a flowchart that shows what happened to Ma Bell in 1984, how it got broken up into, what is this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different countries.
Companies. Well, that's not too bad of a Freudian slip.
Basically, by today, we now have it broken into only 3 companies.
It's all fused back together.
All that time when the internet was exploding... And you saw a lot of competition. You
94.
Can see right where that's happening, where there's tons of companies that existed at that time, you know, that were competing, but they've all been kind of combined again. You know, instead of it being one big company, it's 3, but still, there's just not that competition anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right, well, there's
the logos have gotten better, though.
Go to the forums on geekson.com and... yeah, that's
true. Peter will post a link to this flowchart if you're interested.
Actually, yeah, you should put the flowchart, because that'd bring up an interesting discussion as well.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating thing to look at.
Okay.
You realize it shows very clearly what's wrong with
You could actually do that for a series of different companies and see.
Well, you know,
flowcharts.com.
Flowcharts.
Because if you think back to what it was like when that competition did exist, mm-hmm. I mean, you can remember it. You can remember people actively competing for your dollar.
Right.
You know, and nowadays, that doesn't happen. You move into a place.
MCI.
Yeah. All right, let's move on so we don't have a 2-hour show this time.
I am on a quest for good Halloween movies I haven't seen yet, right? So this past week I rented 2 movies, both of which I'll discuss really briefly.
I already hate them, don't I?
In the hopes of, actually, you will be shocked that you will discover that I have at least one movie on this list that you and I both hate.
Okay.
The first of the two that I saw was The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan.
Which is one of the
Shyamalan
two you hate.
Ding-dong? Right.
Huh?
Which is one of the two you hate, I assume.
I was hoping for something at least fun.
I told you that it was
a little
like,
scary. You know, I was hoping for a little bit of, you know, ooh, that's kind of creepy. Ooh, yeah. What an idea.
There was that one moment when a woman jumps out in the window. There we go. It wasn't scary as like a surprise.
Is that
moment.
One moment where you're in the movie theater with a guy behind you, like,
ah!
Yeah.
And then you were scared because.
Well, I mean, for those of you who don't remember, this is the movie where the trailers promised a very scary, creepy movie where all of a sudden people start committing suicide for no apparent reason.
When the promo people have to tell you how rated R it is, you know the movie is going to be bad.
Yeah.
And
I have to agree.
So freaking scary.
It was one of those movies where, honestly, when you find out what's going on, all I could think was, no, that's got to be a red herring. this can't be the actual story. I mean, no one would actually approve this storyline, would they?
And they also tell it to you 5 minutes into the
movie. Yeah, that's what I thought was so weird. It's like, okay, here's what's happening. All right, here's why it's happening.
But isn't that the M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong turn now?
No.
We're all waiting for the red herring. Oh, it's red herring. Big turn. Realization of what the film has really been about.
I'm fine with not having that model.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. But isn't that sort of the model by which he's always...
Yeah. Well, he didn't do that.
Okay.
He did it 5 minutes into it. He goes, hey, I think there's plant... We have plant problem. And then you went, okay, oh. Well, that... He said it in the first 5 minutes, so that can't be... And then we're going to find out the real thing later.
Yeah. Did we mention spoiler before...
Aaron, oh, I don't give a shit. If you... I do not care. I'm spoiling this fucking...
It just got released on DVD.
Who cares?
No, who saw it in the theaters?
We're telling people not to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, come
on. Hey, here's the rest of what happens. The wind blows a lot, and some people die for no fucking reason. And at the end, it just clears itself up. There. Spoiler alert. I just ruined the worst movie on the planet. Sue me.
So what exactly was causing this bizarre and stupid, you say?
Plants.
Wow. Plants.
Yeah.
It's sport.
And at the end...
Plants spontaneously evolve to emit a chemical that flips the switch in your brain from preserve self to destroy self.
Now,
to the point where you're willing to throw yourself under a lawnmower, you know?
I'm sorry. And someone didn't, like, you know, maybe say at some point that this is a stupid idea.
But listen, keep in mind...
Body snatchers.
Keep in mind...
Plants were in control of...
This theory was thought up by a school teacher in the classroom 5 minutes into the movie. Then, not because he did any type of research, he just wildly guessed at it. Then you figure out true.
In M. Night Shyamalan's defense, no, he didn't. It was a amateur botanist who raised flowers in a greenhouse that came up with a theory.
Okay, whatever.
Pothead hippie guy.
You know, this reminds me, I was talking to a friend who was working on a script where they had to come up with a monster. And at some point, someone said, well, let's make it a giant clam. And he said, okay, you know, this is going to be one of those situations where, you know, they're going to like this idea for like a couple days, and they're going to suddenly say, you know, someone at some point is going to say, hey guys, you know, really,
a giant clam is giant, pretty fucking dumb.
A giant clam? A
couple days?
We're really going to use a giant clam. So like, you know, a week and a half later, they're still on the giant clam. He was finally like, okay, I'm sorry guys, I hate to be the one to say it, but it's a giant fucking clam. No. I don't care if I don't get paid. I don't care if I don't get work on this. No fucking way am I putting my name on a movie with a giant fucking clam.
And obviously nobody had the guts to stand up to M. Night and say that. I mean, it was one of those things where there was no good premise for this movie to be made.
Well, guts to stand up because he has a big powerful name in Hollywood right now. Oh. He's had a failure after failure after failure.
He had a reputation at one point. You know, and yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if there's still 15 some years ago. To respect him.
Yes, but his new reputation is people say, that's a bad idea, and he goes, fuck you, I'm a genius, I'm going to do it anyway.
I mean, I would be kind of curious to see...
But someone gave him the movie. I mean, the money.
I'd be curious what he would do if somebody else gave him a script, if he was not doing something of his own.
No. This last movie was clearly poorly directed.
I'm going to agree.
That script was bullshit.
I'm going
to
agree.
But that movie was so fucking bad, top to bottom, and the acting in it, the Marky Mark.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg is normally so good.
He's actually quite good.
Did you see the last Saturday Night Live where they make fun of him? They go, hey, donkey, what's up?
No.
He acts like that through this entire
freaking
movie.
It's true. There's a small child in the movie. Every time he talks to the child, it's literally straight from Saturday Night Live.
Hey, everybody talks like that. Everyone talks like they're eight. Anyway, why are we giving this
movie? Co-starred Zooey Deschanel.
Who's Kung Sue?
Really?
I like her.
Really?
Yeah. What, did you see? Where is she?
I watched her in Tin Man.
Tin Man, she is garbage.
I really wanted someone to kill Dorothy. Like,
did she come from?
I was begging someone to kill Dorothy.
That was good?
I
saw her
in
Weeds, and I thought she was really funny in Weeds. Right, well, that's about it.
Her career is over in my mind. I'm done.
But she
unless
was
I meet
so
her, she
bad.
Becomes a good friend. I'm sure she's awesome.
You're dead to
All
me.
Right, so The Happening, M. Night Shyamalan. Right. Do not watch it for Halloween.
As if you couldn't.
Maybe
tell.
Watch it for April Fools.
No. It's not even funny.
No,
it's
you make good. Other people watch it for April
yeah,
Fools.
Yeah, pretty much. But this one, no, does not deserve. All right,
what
title
one did you
horror.
Like?
Well, the other one I brought, the other one I wanted to discuss is my second news story, because, you know, I have to make my quota, is Diary of the Dead. So the new Romero movie, a zombie
shot movie. Like candy cam, right? It's like
It's sort of reminiscent of Cloverfield. It's sort of reminiscent of Blair Witch Project,
And the new what is it called? Where they're stuck in the building? I hear it's okay.
Quarantine. I want to see that. Yeah, I actually do want to see that. I've heard bad things, I want to see it. But long story short, I do not think it's the best of his zombie films by a long shot. I don't think it's even really a top-notch zombie film. George Romero's strength is he brings social context to his movies.
Right.
And his downfall is that sometimes he will beat you about the head and shoulders with that social context until you just can't stop screaming.
This is about race relations in America.
Yeah.
This
is a zombie film that is about... the human disconnect from horror, right?
Okay.
Not just horror like horror movies, but like war, inhumanity, violence, crime.
Cool. That's a good theme.
Yeah, and so basically the guy holding the camera throughout the movie is filming the most horrible stuff and never puts the camera down to help people as they're being killed.
It's kind of like Wag the Dog if you ever saw... Or no, sorry.
What do you mean?
Man Eats Dog.
Okay. Not the Dustin Hoffman.
No. Yeah. Man Eat Dog is like a French film about a documentary about they're falling around a killer.
Oh, and they just watch.
Yeah, just watching
him. It is sort of like that. And a bit of a spoiler alert at the end of the movie, sort of the big climactic scene. He was originally filming a horror movie when all this begins. The actress who has survived through the movie is being chased by a zombie dressed in the costume of his monster. And he doesn't intervene to help her as she's screaming and asking him, why the hell are you not stopping the zombie from killing me? As they wander through the woods, he just follows them and keeps commenting. I'm like, told you. Like, they just keep shambling at you. I told you, that's the way this should be. And it's like, it's so preachy that it's hard to have fun with the parts that are basically decent.
Right.
Right.
You know, it's a little too, he's not dainty with the subject.
Yeah.
No, it's too bad.
And which is sort of a sad thing because I think it actually is one of his better casts acting wise. I thought it was an okay cast.
Well, you know, with his original film, he was making race relations, but he was like, nobody's going to watch a film about this. So let me disguise it as a zombie film. Now he's like, I'm George Romero.
Yeah, second one was capitalism.
Right.
Third one was, I guess, sort of military-industrial complex. I'm not really sure. Yeah, the third one I'm a little sketchy on. But
third one, he needs some money.
Yeah.
and in some zombie costumes.
What is it? City of the Dead?
I never saw it.
City of the Dead, I actually thought was a better film as far as like
zombie
action.
I think I know the guy who wrote
that. Oh, it wasn't George Romero?
I don't think so. I think it was Billy Butler. Is it called the... Necropolis or something like that?
No, that's Dawn of the Dead 4 something.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyway,
Return of the Living Dead 4, Rave Till Dawn, Necropolis. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a Sci-Fi Channel movie.
Got it.
But, it does have some mood, though. It does have some interesting stuff. It's sort of interesting to watch the zombie outbreak perspective from a group of people that isn't near a zombie outbreak for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never really see a big screaming horde of zombies in this one. It's kind of a low-key zombie film.
Right.
But it's interesting. If you're looking for something a little bit more brainy than the average zombie movie, I'd give this one a shot. But it's sort of your tastes may vary.
Okay. Got it. All right, I'm only going to do one article here since we're...
Running over.
But apparently some scientists have maybe come out with a pill that would selectively erase traumatic memories.
Ooh.
Kind of like the internal sunshine of a spotless mind type of thing. There is an enzyme that they've tested on rats where they've shocked a bunch of rats and, you know, got them to be afraid of a light. Every time they see a light, they get a shock. Anyway, they gave them this enzyme and they could selectively remove that memory.
Right. Actually, even more freaky was that, like, if they had this, they showed these rats a light, but then they shock them.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, then they provide it. And what's happening is your brain in that second is mapping that information. It's going light, shock, ow, okay, no more light, move off the thing. And they found out that actually just flashing the light in the future to the, let's say 3 months, 4 months down the line, that rat in that moment is remapping that memory of what's happening. And so they found out that even in the future, 3 months, 4 months down the line, they can provide this drug and it will erase that memory at that point in time.
So there actually may be something out there that could make me feel better about the happening.
Yes. And unless you re-listen to our show and I spoil it for you again.
You bitch.
So in the article they say, you know, maybe this could be used for people who have post-traumatic stress syndrome or type. But how many people here believe that this money, research money, is being developed, given for that and not for more...
It's a good cover
dark,
story.
Yeah, yeah, it is a good cover story. I think people who throw in money at this bullshit is... Yeah.
I predict a lot more like happy federal government workers and a lot more sort of semi-amnesiac hookers in Nevada.
Well, yeah,
not to be like the downer guy, but a lot more Guantanamo Bay people who are like, yeah, I've never been tortured.
Yeah, exactly. There's all sorts of dark, scary results of this little pill.
Oy. Why am I missing
and
my
how
pinkies?
About, you know, like, I mean, I don't want to be even more darker, and I'm sorry my brain went this way, but let's say they have like a, like maybe you mix it with like a date rape drug. So not only do you do these horrible things, but you can't even, your victims aren't even going to be able to remember it. So they can't even bust you. It's like the perfect crime pill.
Wow.
All right. All you sci-fi writers, get on it. Scary drug. That's all I'm saying.
That's frightening.
That is.
Whatever happened to the whole Kirk thing of like, no, I need my pain. My pain makes me.
I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. But maybe, you know, it's hard to say that when maybe you haven't gone through something that's so crazy.
PTSD, I can see. I mean, that could be really helpful with a lot of people. I mean, yeah, even just women who have been through severe rape who, you know, it takes 20 years.
But would it be kind of scary to know that maybe something has happened to you and then they've removed it? Isn't that also scary? I mean, I have the luxury of not having those memories. So right. I'm doing this way out off
pure,
course
pure
here.
Devil. Advocate.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there something
Babylon 5 did an entire episode of the concept of erasure of personality, right? And what is your personality but the summation of your memories and experiences?
What if you don't want to be that personality anymore? What if the summation of those memories is not a good thing?
Well, and the other thing I can't help but wonder is, you know, would removing a specific memory or set of memories cure post-traumatic stress disorder?
Mm.
You know, in a lot of ways, post-traumatic stress disorder is learned behavior.
Yeah, and there's also body memory, which we'll bring up in our big
topic. But learned behavior is based off of memory.
Yeah, well...
Like, what if I can unlearn something by taking a pill?
Well, and also, we don't fully understand exactly how that works. So, like, if the theory of the unconscious... is true,
mm-hmm.
will erasing your conscious memory of something cure the underlying cause of a condition?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
There's actually some
Help
interesting things in our
mouse.
Discussion that we could talk about.
The mouse is okay. Okay.
Petey?
Anything else, Pete?
That's it. Okay. So I got one last thing. The latest request from the Pentagon jars the senses. They're looking for contractors to provide a, quote, multi-robot pursuit system. That will
I read this. This is so creepy.
It's creepy.
Wait, pursuit?
That multi-robot pursuit system that will let packs of robots, quote, search for and detect non-cooperative humans.
I love how they phrase that.
Who's making this type of shit up?
Now, I have a picture of it. I'll show you in a second.
The picture of this is so creepy.
I don't know if you remember those robots that this
designer.
Robots. Yeah, the walking robots.
It looks like a table. For those of you who are not familiar with the robot we're talking about, it basically looks like a table with four legs that are sort of multi-jointed.
Look like a deer, like deer legs.
Like deer legs in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it has no head. It's just a walking table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So now, given that iRobot last year struck a deal with Taser International,
the can on top of it,
right? Well, they struck a deal with Taser International to mount stun weapons on military robots. How long before we see packs of droids hunting down pesky demonstrators with paralyzing weapons?
Now, this is another one of those, like, why is our research even going down this path deal? Let's create a pack of robots that can think on their own, that chase down uncooperative humans, and guess what? Let's mount some tasers on it.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that there will be one human that they want who's going to be sort of the brain for the group of robots.
Oh, yeah. God.
So that's their method.
Until they turn on them.
Well, yeah.
As they always do.
Have we learned nothing from Terminator, people? Come on.
Matt's been watching.
When they get, you know, one falls on a rock and bumps their, in you know, inhibitor chip.
I know some researchers we have to send episode 103 to.
Yeah. What we have here are the beginnings of something designed to enable robots to hunt down humans like a pack of dogs. Once the software is perfected, we can reasonably anticipate that they will become autonomous and become armed. This is what the detractors are saying.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
So right. Why don't we move on to our topic?
We should. I just wanted to mention a couple of two things. E3 is returning next year in full video game form, 2009.
Well, but I'm curious.
Do they have everyone?
Well, I'm curious. They haven't signed everybody up. So who knows if, like, EA is showing up? Who knows if Microsoft is showing up?
Well, I mean, if they basically say, if the organization wants to say, okay, we'll set up all of your things for free, then maybe.
Well, I think it was quite clear that nobody was happy with E3 in the last 2 years.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible this year.
Yeah, and that they used to think that you weren't getting anything out of E3 because you were spending too much money and you couldn't target the right people to get your message out.
Right.
Then they overcompensated. Nobody was showing up, and no one thought it was worth spending the money targeting the 15 people who did come to your small little room. So now they've decided to... It's not open to the public, but they're opening the...
Somewhat.
Well, like the other E3 was open to the public.
Somewhat.
They're being relaxed on who can get in. But they said bloggers might... they'll consider bloggers on a, you know, case-by-case basis. So we should try getting our credentials.
We have history.
Yeah.
We have history.
You know, the thing is... It seems like it's in their best interest to have people come, lots of people come and see it. I mean, you know.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about.
I'm surprised that they...
You hit a critical mass where nobody can see anything.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I'm saying is it would seem to me like if I was going to be in charge of E3, I would want to do something semi-like Comic-Con. You know, where you've got like a big floor and people can see things, they can get a sense of it. But I would have like a, you know, a private press area where people can do individual demos for press.
This I think is going to have a 2 days beforehand, which is only a certain press. They get to go in.
Oh, that's smart.
Go through, and then they open it up later to the bloggers.
I know a lot of press people, like non-video game people. Mm-hmm. Hated going to E3 and they hate going to Comic-Con because getting around and doing anything is near to impossible there.
You just got
to
slog.
But here's the other problem with E3 is E3 is previewing games that have not been yet completed. And so if you cannot focus and select the people who are getting information, people start jumping to conclusion about your project.
Got it.
Yeah. And if you don't have people who understand what you're being shown, they make assumptions that are incorrect. So if you have a game that's 40% done, mm-hmm. and you've got a level, and you've got a reporter who understands what 40% done means, meaning there's bugs, the control isn't great, there's going to be slowdown.
Yeah.
They're not going to report, this game sucks because there's all sorts of slowdown. But some jackhole who's a blogger who comes in who's 18, you know, 16, mm-hmm. gets in there. He plays around with this thing. He doesn't know anything about it. He's going to write on his blog that then gets spread everywhere that this game totally sucks. And the publisher can't go to him and say, hey, let me explain to you my game. Mm-hmm. This is going to be fixed. He just picks it up, plays it, and then walks off and says, that game sucks. And that was part of the problem they were having with E3. So what they were doing was they were pulling all of the developers working on the game off the game to develop a demo for E3 that takes 6 months just to do a demo so that some blogger – so it looks great and controls great, so some blogger won't –
from you know, a, screw from a up. Producer standpoint, it was always a nightmare to have to try and make anything for E3.
Yeah.
Because you actually have to stop doing design. You actually have to stop working on the actual mechanics of the game in order to produce something that looks like polished.
Fish. Yeah.
Which actually means by that point, if depending on the amount of publicity your game gets, you may actually get locked into a style of gameplay or an element of gameplay you didn't want.
Mm-hmm. Just to clean it up for the demo.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are a lot of great games that are coming out this year that I'm really excited about. And, you know, E3 didn't seem to do much for them. I mean, I don't know of any publicity about them that
E3
I got.
E3 was pathetic.
It was
nothing this year.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, we're all terribly excited about, you know, Fables 2, Fallout. You know, right.
But those are titles which have gone before. I wonder how many new titles we missed because we weren't at E3 or because E3
wasn't. Yeah, like, you know, there's Midnight Club Los Angeles that's releasing this week. No one's heard a damn thing about. Or even Shaun White snowboarding. We've seen some pictures, but no one's really, you know, it's a little weird.
That's not releasing soon, is it? That's a ways off.
What, Shaun White?
Yeah.
No, it's coming out this winter. Yeah.
Oh, and there's the new technology where they're gonna censor people in real time on Microsoft, on Xbox Live.
Really?
What? Yeah. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, they're gonna cut out the F-bombs and all the other... They're gonna try and censor in real time.
That's interesting.
So when
you're gonna get a new form of lead speak because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually kind of cool, though. I like that.
Make them think.
The new Xbox Live goes online November 4th or November 9th, I think. So that will also be curious because that's right when all these multiplayer games are coming out. So they cannot fuck this up. Or they can't goop this up.
or in Xbox version, fuck.
They can't fuke this up. All right. Let's start this show.
Let's move it.
So, Matt.
Yes.
Why don't you introduce us to this bizarro topic?
It is a bizarro topic. It is Frankenstein syndrome, or specifically we're talking about cellular memory. We're talking about mirrored self-misidentification. What those things are like the movies where the guy's arm gets chopped off and it goes off and tries to kill someone, or The Eye with Jessica Alba, or Frankenstein, for that matter.
Creation. We're talking about dismemberment and reattachment
loss.
Missing body parts. Loss. Added body parts.
Exactly. Whether or not this is... And now that we're starting to reach a level of technology where we're actually doing this...
Yeah, this stuff is real now.
It's real.
You can lose a leg and have a new one put on that is better, stronger, and faster than your old one.
Right.
You know, there's actually debates in long-distance running whether or not these new sort of graphite... Have you seen these graphite legs with a sort of spring-loaded feet?
Yeah.
Whether using those is cheating due to the fact that they provide more lift and speed than the actual human
Wasn't
foot.
There a runner who actually, she had one leg chopped off and her running leg was running faster than her normal leg and she got the other one cut off?
No, I don't know.
That may be an urban legend, but I'm not sure.
Huh. I would have heard of that before, but...
I have heard that before, it's an urban legend.
Okay.
I think. But Snopes it.
Yeah,
sure that second part is false, but...
Okay.
Oh, because nobody's that compulsive in the real
world. Well, you're right.
But
so how do we want to start this conversation?
Well, I think we should talk a little bit about sort of movies and video games.
Like why we're talking about it?
Yeah, why we're talking. I mean, there's so many things about, like, The Eye, which came out with Jessica Alba, which was about this.
Well, why do we write about it?
First of all, let's be clear. We're not just covering the concept of like a hand getting chopped off and having a life of its own.
Right.
We're also covering the concept of the horror of losing a limb.
Right.
Like, for example, in Saw, when they cut off a leg, or whatever.
Boxing Helena, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
That movie actually creeped me out more than most horror movies.
Well, okay. So what is besides the obvious fact is there anything beyond just saying, just being, you know, having your life change and being more difficult by having missing body limbs. Is there something that is really striking us that we want to write about it and put in video games and all?
It's the introduction of the other.
It's almost worse than death.
A lot of the horror yeah. that comes from this is not actually from losing a limb. Like, that's bad. You know, it's not something anyone rushes towards. But you can still live a very good life, a perfectly normal life, missing one. Mm-hmm. It's the horror seems to come when a new body part is introduced to replace it from someone else. Mm. In general, that's where a lot of the horror movies sort of start taking... What is it, Raising Kane that does that? Am I thinking the right movie?
I'm not sure.
No,
yeah, Raising Kane
one.
Is
that's
the twin
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's another good one?
There's The Hand.
Idle Hands.
That's a Michael Caine.
Idle Hands. Grindhouse, even. You know,
Army of number of movies where, like, the guy gets a heart transplant and finds out it's from a serial murderer. And,
right. Yeah.
Well, that's even different. I mean, that's, I think, even different in a way, you know, this whole, like, cellular memory type of thing. But
or
I think
is
there's,
the soul somehow transplanted?
I think, like, you know, when we see, like, a serial killer who comes up and kills somebody, that's one thing. When we have a serial killer who dismembers somebody's limbs,
right.
It's almost more shocking.
Well, like the guy in Dexter, in that first season of Dexter.
Well, Dexter does that.
Yeah.
That was very...
Dexter himself does that.
Right.
You know, I mean, he cuts the bodies into pieces, you know. And what's interesting is how in a weird way, you even though he's this twisted man, you really kind of like Dexter, you know. I mean, you know, but which is not... I mean, it's a different type of horrific thing that you start to recognize, not the right word.
I wonder whether or not the feeling that we have over something getting dismembered is also a recognition. There was a scientific study which basically said that people who had been quadriplegics or paraplegics had for years said, I feel less now that I'm this person. Not even like I don't feel my legs, but I feel less emotionally. Mm-hmm. I feel less connectivity to other people. And for years, people went, oh, that's just, you know, sort of a psycho reaction to the trauma of your event. Mm-hmm. And they found out recently that no, it is a fact that there is less simulation because it's not coming through the body. So I wonder whether or not there's sort of a visceral reaction to getting an arm removed that basically says, I'm going to feel less. I'm not going to be... I'm not going to be my whole soul.
I wonder if, you know, there's a debate on what makes you you.
Right.
And a lot of people believe that it's just your... The collection of memories, like you were suggesting, in your brain, and that's kind of way you are. Maybe your soul that lives in your brain. But I think there's a lot of research and there's a lot of, you know... philosophical discussion about what really is beyond that, and part of that is your body. I know that a lot of times we use the terms my hand, my foot as is the ownership of it, but not necessarily connected to. You don't say that's me down there on my foot.
Yeah,
you
the use me these is terms. Pretty much reserved for head and torso.
I think that's partly because the senses kind of converge. Mm-hmm. Like you feel like you're behind your eyes only because your eyes are up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think though that people have found, especially in these cases you're finding out, is that maybe there is more of a connection that your body is just as much of you as your brain or your memories or your soul or whatever.
In fact, you know, I mean, one of the things I do is I take something called Tai Chi. Okay. And one of the things we talk about a lot is that there is a mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm. Distinctly.
And one of the things that we notice is that when you are stressed out, you know, emotionally, when you are stressed out by your brain is stressed, you start to see that effect showing it in the body. You see tension that starts to build in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Where this gets really interesting, however, is that when you start doing something like Tai Chi, where you start to deliberately try to find stress in the body, and use your consciousness to release that tension, you start to find some of those emotions that originally caused the stress that start to come back up.
There's a connection between finding it in your body and the emotion that was attached to it.
Sometimes in Tai Chi, someone will be, you know, starting to relax, and they haven't relaxed in a long time, and all of a sudden they just start crying. You know, they'll have all these emotions suddenly start coming out.
Or same thing in massage.
Yeah, when they've massaged out injuries from people who have been in severe accidents, sometimes people have a recollection of the full accident.
when Matt massages like right here, right in the front of my shoulder.
How point, dare you?
I start point. Swearing like a sailor.
Yeah, he does. He does.
It's weird.
Bringing in even more geeky, I think some of the, you know, we've seen some science fiction and stuff talk about this part a little bit. Like, for example, I think Cyberpunk or...
Yeah, Cyberpunk.
The more you Shadowrun, the more you remove from your body, the less...
Human
you become.
Yeah, they refer to it in the game as cyberpsychosis, and they always talk about what I loved about Cyberpunk was that the more metal that you wanted to put into your skin, fine, absolutely, but your empathy drops, your ability to relate with other human beings within the context of the game drops until finally you reach a level where the GM goes, give me your character. And now you just turn into a crazy maniac who basically thinks you're surrounded by water bags.
But it's interesting that, you know, at first it sounds like just, you know, a game mechanic they've decided to put in. But if you really put some thought about it, or if you read about this, there is some validity to this idea of loss of body parts and loss of empathy or loss of identity. Mm-hmm. I did read around a bit about loss of identity, and... a lot of transplant patients have, now this is an even a stranger thing, a lot of transplant patients start having identity problems. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about, we'll talk about this later, something maybe called cellular memory, which may or not exist. But these are people who, for example, recently we had face transplant.
Right.
Now, yikes. That's pretty severe.
Well, that'll set off the mirrored self-identification. And the mirrored self-identification is basically it's the delusional belief that one's reflection in a mirror is some other person, or often believed to be somebody who's following you around.
Well, I heard about some of these, you know, there's a big ethical debate about the face transplant, mainly because it's such a radical departure of what you're looking like.
It was a strange... The purpose for it was a woman had her face destroyed.
Destroyed by a dog, yeah. The dog, by a pit bull that just clamped onto her.
And then a dead person was available, and they basically took all of the tissues from that person's face.
Yes.
And rebuilt her face with that tissue.
Correct.
But so let me just get it clear. She didn't look like that person.
But she didn't look like herself.
But she didn't look like herself. I mean, either, they had to completely reconstruct her face.
She looked like a you know, the zombie who always has the like cheek cut out, and you can see their teeth all the way to the back, and like her muscles were. She looked terrible, and they had to reconstruct her muscle from the inside out as well. She was messed up.
Well, how did the ultimate operation work? Did she have mobility to her face?
Yes. She's not obviously not, you know, any more than a hand patient is back to, you know, playing the violin, but. You know, she did not have full mobility, but she did.
Which brings up actually, I'm going to bring up a slightly different concept on this point now.
That's an interesting phrase you've used.
But let me just finish out about this.
That is an interesting phrase.
You know, as if in some way by losing her face, in some way she wasn't human or our sense of human, that getting her face back.
Well, the distortion of the human form is how we find horror.
Well, she didn't necessarily have like she wasn't human, but she was having identity problems about who she thought she was.
Right.
And that has happened several times with even arms, even internal organs like hearts and stuff. Mm-hmm. People start having this mental...
Well...
And remember the guy who had the penis transplant? We kind of thought... there was a guy recently who had a penis transplant.
Yikes.
And, you know, saved him. And yet, after months and months...
Oh, that's right. He got rid of it.
He got rid of it because it freaked him out that badly.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strange identity thing.
I was thinking about this. And, I mean, I've had... rule number one to all geeks, don't mess with Don. I had my knee fully replaced when I messed with Don, and
I made him bionic.
Exactly. Well, not actually. You made
better,
me
better, stronger, faster.
I actually have an allograft, which is a dead guy's Achilles tendon in my knee. And when I first got this, well, one of the things was when I would do squats, I noticed that it squeaked. Which made me like, ugh.
Help me.
Right, exactly. And I remember the first few months that I had this knee and I was reconstructing it, the musculature around it, I would talk to my knee a lot. I remember being like, come on, just work with me a little bit. Come on, move. And I was
thinking about that. You had a disconnect with your knee.
I had a little bit of a disconnect. When I was thinking about this, I was like, I wonder whether or not, you know, that was just sort of me going, come on, Matt, work a little harder, or whether or not that was literally talking to the knee. I don't know.
Well, I have a concept here that I want to bring up, which is, what if this sort of fear of the self and the degradation of self is rooted in something that's very natural that we've had to deal with throughout history, which are various diseases. You know, Stephen R. Donaldson wrote
White Gold Wielder, The One Tree.
And what's the series called? The Thomas Covenant series. The Unbeliever. And, you know, I just started to read this, and it's a, for those of you who are not familiar with it, the main character is a guy who has leprosy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about, as having leprosy, some of the problems that come out of that, which is that you start to lose the feeling in your hands, your feet, your body, so you simply can't feel when you hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that you will hurt yourself, not know it, and you'll get infections, and basically, the next thing you know, you have half your hand being cut off because you didn't treat the infection.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, which, when you think about that, I mean, how similar is that? Which is something that people have faced throughout history.
Which also brings us back to the pain conversation from the news story, where, you know, is that pain necessary to,
right,
as a functional way to keep the human body functioning for a longer period of time?
But the point I was going to make is, how similar is that, this disease that causes you to have to take pieces of your hand off or whatever, to, for example, the movie Splinter we were just talking about a second ago, where, you know, you get infected with something and you might have to cut your hand off to keep from being fully infected.
Changes to the other.
Right.
Yeah,
to become,
so that fear may be connected to maybe disease and your body.
Yeah, a disease taking away the body, or a disease taking over your body, which, when we make it into a horror film, we exaggerate it to become literally not just a disease, but some other entity or a host or something seeking a host.
Well, I think there's an additional thing is, you know, there's one thing about being killed instantly, you're dead,
right?
But there's another thing of being slowly
losing,
taking
yourself.
Being taken apart, and when psycho killers and creatures and stuff do that. In fact, you know what? I had this exact same feeling when Hal gets turned off.
Oh, right.
In 2001. Now, this is done a little bit differently. He's a robot, and he doesn't have appendages.
You're touching my hands.
Yeah,
please.
He's slowly taking out chips.
Right.
And he's feeling it, and there was something so sick about that scene, and so dark about Hal saying, I can feel it, Dave.
Right. Well, there's something very visceral about it. I mean, and if you think about it, there's even a children's song where there's, you know, I'm being swallowed by a boa constrictor, and it's like, uh-oh, he's up to my toe. Oh, gee, he's up to my knee. You know, and it goes,
I've never heard this song in my life.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, heck, he's up to my neck. And it's like slowly, slowly, slowly being swallowed
what
by a boat.
What the hell kind of day camps did you go to? Dear Lord,
hey, man,
like,
ring around the rosy.
I am never
is
sending my kid to the Addams Family getaway camp. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. All right. So,
One thing I wanted to discuss real quick is the concept that Terry Pratchett uses a lot, mm-hmm. Which is called morphic resonance.
Right.
Right. Which is your body tells the world what it is, and your body responds by telling your body what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look like Peter, the world treats you like Peter, affirming that you are Peter. You become Peter.
Yeah.
But if the mind of Peter was put into a crow, for example, you may still be telling the world that you're Peter, but the world is going to keep telling you, no, you're a crow.
Right.
And your body's shape is going to shape your mind.
Right.
And eventually change you from Peter into the crow the world believes you're supposed to be.
Right. Yeah.
The crow that you really are.
So when a piece of the body is removed, right? I mean, one of the things that defines, in our minds, a human being, a person,
you know,
and apologies to all of our disability listeners out there, is the standard belief, two eyes, two arms, two legs, two ears, the symmetry there.
Right, bilateral symmetry.
And when that symmetry is removed, or even if the entire symmetry is altered, do we know what does the world say to you then?
Right.
Well, I have a very personal experience with that, which is, you know, a lot
when,
of you
when
know
you lost
that
your tooth.
I lost one of my two front teeth for about 9 months.
Right.
You know, while they were doing a transplant to put a fake tooth in, and you know, it's interesting. You are treated differently.
Huh.
You know, I mean, and you feel different. You know, your confidence in how you're going to interact with people is a very different thing.
Yeah. What do you guys feel like the Rose McGowan's missing leg replaced with a gun
Grindhouse
symbol?
That made me uncomfortable.
Did it not? There was no kind of sexual.
Well, or
Or,
I mean, because some people thought it was kind of sexy.
Or Ash. Well, yeah, there's the whole people who like robotics, too, and you remove and it's actually a robot underneath. You know, yes. You pull off an arm and it's actually a robot arm. There's some people who get off on that. But if you think about Ash in...
Alien?
In Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness.
Right? Or, you know, movies where we've had guys with a gun as an arm. We're like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Bionic Commando, for God's sake.
Absolutely. You know? It gets us all hot and bothered.
Yeah, there's the, like, you know? Cool, like, that's, you know, now I can shoot using just
that
my, you
becomes
know.
A symbol of masculinity.
Right.
So, but even if you go farther back, look at pirates, you know,
the hook
hand, right. The peg leg. We're talking symbols
like evil,
of ultimate
evil.
Ultimate evil, but masculine evil.
Right.
Right?
Missing eyes.
Yeah, like that made them physically formidable and dangerous and powerful, empowered. Whereas, like, you know, you didn't, if you saw a woman with a hook in any of those older stories, either object of pity or masculinized woman, object of power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's very interesting on that level, I think.
Well, to take a step back, the thing that was Peter was saying about, you know, the disconnect between the body and the mind and where one or the other resides. I was listening to a radio lab called Where Am I? And it was fascinating because they talked about, let's say I walk into a room and I see one of you guys dead on the floor, yeah. Right? Now, my eyes process this information, turn the visual image from dots and lines, process it through it, goes to my prefrontal cortex, and I go, ee! You know, Don's dead,
right?
Now, what's actually happening at the same time is that visual information is processing and going directly to my amygdala as well and going faster than the 1 second, 2 second that it takes for my prefrontal cortex to process the information. My body is processing it faster. So before my brain knows that Don is dead, my heart rate is already going up.
You've already got the fork and knife out. You're already...
Right, I'm already ready to eat him.
Tartar sauce,
right,
is, already
tartar sauce is already made. But the body already knows this information. And I was reading a book called Blink, which talked about these two card decks. And one card deck made you money, and one card deck took away money, right? And people started learning the game. And as they learned the game, they got better and better and better at this game. But they found out that their bodies started sweating, their heart rate started going up. Whenever one card was revealed, at least 10 to 15 minutes before people figured out how the game was working. So they were already having the physical reactions. So it's fascinating that the body actually is going on and having a complete other life than the mind is.
All right, speaking of that, let's segue to some of these weird things I read about. There is a condition where some people feel better or would feel like more of a whole person if they had missing parts that they don't have.
Yes.
Body dysmorphic something? What's it called?
No, it's not body dysmorphic disorder. That's a little bit different. I was going to print it out and I forgot. But these are people who dream or wish they had certain parts of their bodies amputated.
Generally limbs.
Generally limbs. And generally left-sided limbs.
Really? I didn't know that.
They said that they think that maybe there might be some damage to the right part of a certain part of the brain, which then is connected with the left side of your body. Mm-hmm. So that they think that this kind of damage or...
That's also fascinating. What it could mean is there's sort of phantom signals going to their hand. And so it's just making it feel foreign because of
What they think sometimes, for one thing, they think there's a disconnect between the two sides of the brain, and they think maybe that could be part of it, that maybe there's not like a communication going on, which is different. Have you guys have heard of alien hand syndrome?
Yes.
No.
this is actually kind of shown up in things like Dr. Strangelove.
Right.
Dr. Strangelove had alien hand. His hand was doing things that he didn't want it to do.
Just mein Führer.
Had a different like consciousness. So people who have alien hand syndrome believe that their hand has a mind of their own. And sometimes it even does things to help you out, but you don't have conscious control. For example, there was an example of like a woman who would like with her right hand would like put a cigarette in her hand, and before she could light it, the other left hand took it out and threw it away. And she said, "Oh, I guess," she used the term "he." "I guess he doesn't want me to smoke right now." And again, that was another disconnect between the right and left side of the brain. The brain is working and trying to work in pairs, but because that connection between two sides isn't there, they're not communicating. And so there's a actual, essentially it two
actually,
beings.
It actually does seem to show a sort of sentience often.
This sounds like... Yeah. A House episode where they find out that you're actually like twins and have a little piece of the twins' brain.
Vestigial twin.
Vestigial brain.
It has shown up in, like, I think there's an ER episode, I think. Anyway, but it's shown up in, like, you know, there's, like, you know, Dr. Strangelove. He had alien hand syndrome. It was like he was being choked. He did, like, he was the Heil Hitler thing. And so it has shown up in some literature out there. But what a bizarro.
Well,
Which just underscores what we started with, talking about having your limbs replaced with someone else's, feeling like that is not yours. They are still in that limb.
There are also societies of people right now that I know that trade body parts. They'll sell you, like, hey, I've got my pinky. Mm-hmm. If you want it, and they'll send them to each other in a jar.
Well, I hate to make the comparison, but Catholic relics. Of body parts of saints sent around the world, supposedly containing a bit of the...
But those aren't attached. Those are like relics.
Well, they're believed to have a life
The point he's making, though, is that it's the belief that if you take a piece of the human being, that it has some representative force of who that human being was.
Okay, so there's the next question is, where does the soul reside? Where is us?
Well, let's also talk about...
In my solar
plexus.
Let's
also talk about this thing called cellular memory. This is talked about a lot on the internet, and there are a lot of books being written about it.
Assassin's Creed.
That Assassin's Creed is exactly this idea. Yeah.
Very good call.
And that is the idea that there is somehow some type of memory attachment to cells, and that if you give a heart to somebody or give a limb to somebody, that there is some type of memory transfer going on.
I don't know how many people actually asked me whether or not my leg had gone off and tried to kill anybody once I got my knee replaced.
Well, yeah, because we've heard these stories. And in some of this, and there's been these accounts of, like, a woman who got a heart transplant and started having all these horrible dreams of being attacked and murdered, and apparently the person that it came from was brutally murdered, and they actually caught the guy based off of this new person's identifying who it was.
Great movie.
This is kind of an urban legend.
Yeah, that has to be an urban legend.
Yeah,
it'd
be a great movie.
There are accounts where people said they've gotten arms and legs, and they've changed their, like, eating habits. With the, I don't know. I just feel like I want.
I've
never liked watermelon. I've never liked, you know, spaghetti, and now I'm, you know, eating it or whatever.
Although, one thing is that they do say that your tastes sometimes change every certain number of years. I mean,
that doesn't seem to be consistent.
But that also brings up another question: is because we're also sloughing off skin, we're also constantly. Our cells are constantly regenerating, dying off, and being reborn. So basically, every number of years, you're a completely new human being. You know?
True, but here's the final experiment that has put some validity to this. And I don't have all the details right in front of me. We'll put a link up to it. There was some scientists who studied flatworms and essentially trained these worms to. Respond to a light with either food or electricity. I wasn't sure if it was a negative or positive stimulus. So they would respond to this light. Mm-hmm. They trained a couple of these worms to learn that. So when finally, if you just turned the light on, they would, you know, react even if they weren't getting the stimulus. Mm-hmm. They were trained. They then killed the worms.
Okay.
They ground them up and fed them to another group of worms. And those worms learned the response. Yeah, this is a real experiment. This actually happened.
That's freaky.
Yeah. So there is some, like, this cellular memory thing has been kept alive because of these type of stories and experiments. So yeah. It's an interesting concept. It does end up in things like video games, like Assassin's Creed.
Though it's a little unclear on what level that is transmitting. There's another example of... there's an isolated island group. I wish I could remember more details of this experiment, where each island group had a breed of monkeys, mm-hmm. right? But there was no communication between those monkey groups because they were separated by water.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. One young chimpanzee was observed after they gave them pieces of cut
fruit. Eating the, the 100 monkey examination.
Yeah, he washed the fruit and learned that if he washed it, it was easier to eat and tasted better.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the other monkeys on that island learned that. Right? But it was unique to that island.
Mm-hmm.
Until they went to another island and discovered the monkeys there had spontaneously learned the same behavior.
Yeah. And they tested for subvocal communication, hypervocal communication, you know, all sorts of different things. And they could not figure out why these monkeys had learned this behavior. So they taught them another behavior.
They did it again as another experiment, and the same thing happened.
Exactly.
The learned behavior jumped between population groups with no communication between the
collective groups. Collective consciousness.
Yes.
Or a quantum change in the way the
quantum learning.
Right.
You know.
Well,
everything being connected. I mean, Matt and I have at least talked about how we notice, and in fact, you notice if you go back through history, that a lot of the big steps that have happened in history, you know, there's one person that has credit for it, but oftentimes you'll see that there are two or three people who are cusping at the same time.
Like, why suddenly did classical music explode out of nothing? Why suddenly, when the Wright brothers discovered how to fly, within 3 weeks in Russia, in, you know, various
places. Same thing with radio.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
well,
boom.
Getting back to dismemberment, I think this cellular memories end up in a lot of horror films where I think The Eye was like that, and what was the one where you put the killer's hand on there.
I think that was the hand, yeah.
That's Michael Caine. There's all sorts of, like, you get a killer's blah, blah, and then you turn out...
It was The Simpsons, the Treehouse of Horror, where Homer got Spike's transplanted hair.
One thing I always found very interesting, you see this in movies, you see this in television, you even see it in role-playing games with things like the Eye of Vecna, the Hand of Vecna.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Having the replacement body part is often seen as something that is often portrayed as something that gives you new powers, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the cost of self.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's always a negative, demonic sort of thing. It's never like, you know, an angel's arm. Like, you're given an arm of Mother Teresa and suddenly you have saintly abilities to heal and everyone loves you. You
know, I don't know if I've told you guys this. I had a friend run a role-playing game and it was great because somebody got a bionic hand, but it was an alien technology,
mm-hmm.
and it was incomplete. And so this character became sort of defined around the fact that he was looking for, you know, how to complete his hand. And so he got a piece of the thumb, and he got a new power every time he got a piece of this hand. And the guy was playing the character as he got more and more powerful. He wasn't told to by the GM. It wasn't an evil hand. He just became more of a dick.
Because
that's interesting.
Eventually, I mean, it was like, you know, it would be... We'd have to corral him to get him to play with us because he was all about just wanting to get the most powerful hand in the entire world.
Yeah.
And the final thing was we had this big, huge final battle and he gets the tip of the pinky of this hand to finally replace it. And he gets it, and he's like, yes, I have all the power. At which point, the hand went, thank you, I'm finally complete, and left.
And suddenly, he went from the strongest to the weakest.
Exactly. And he
Clever
was like...
GM.
But
Clever
I was like,
GM.
I was like, wow, you know? He didn't do anything. The character, actually, I wonder whether or not there's something in that, you know, you just want to become a dick once you get the most powerful hand in the world.
Interesting.
Another sort of role-playing thing is in a sort of a superhero game, there was a superhero that we created, very twisted superhero, who his power was that whatever he ate, whatever flesh he ate, he developed either the memories or the abilities of that.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's like the super flatworm.
Cow man.
So, like, you know, if you were doing an investigation and you needed to know how someone died or you needed some memory from someone, he could do that. The problem was he couldn't eat hamburgers. He couldn't eat chicken. You know, any
he
of those
had
things
the ability to grok.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, you know.
Grok man.
He was a vegetarian unless he really needed to
Killer
not grok. Be.
Killer grok. Oh, bad, Don. So I wonder, Don, I don't know if you want to talk about this. We can decide whether or not we want to put it on the episode. Mm-hmm. But with body dysmorphism, right?
Yeah.
Where basically who you are is changing in reference to what you see in the mirror. You're going through this a little bit now,
big time.
As your body changes.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether or not you have any reaction to that's not me in the mirror.
You're not going to be a dick, are you?
I've been warned I might be.
Great.
Not yet. I mean, I'm not so departed yet.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't remember if we discussed this on the podcast, but long story short, I'm not going to be on the next episode because I'm going to be having gastric bypass surgery.
Okay.
On early November. So I will be out. But yeah, I'll let you know as things change.
Wow.
If I get a phone call, I don't know who I am. Not but I'm a anymore. Dick. Asshole.
I'm changing my name to Chet.
No. Yeah, but it is one of those things where, like, everyone I've spoken to who's had it done, like, a very common reaction is, like, as what someone told me was, like, she went out with some friends over to a lake, right? And they were going to go kayaking on the lake, and they showed her the kayak she was going to be in, and she looked at the kayak, and she's like, are you people freaking nuts? I can't fit into that thing. And they all looked at her like she was insane, because wow. None of them had known her when she was overweight. And so she could easily fit into the kayak,
huh. But...
it didn't occur to her that that would be possible.
It's like driving an SUV for so long, and then when you get a small car, you keep going up to parking spaces and go, nope, nope, nope. And yeah, I was like, would you just park the damn car?
You know, but it is one of those things where the world tells you what you are.
Huh.
And if the world tells you that you're, you know, you're small,
huh. You
react like you're small,
yeah. You
know?
Actually, that's fascinating because Kat's having the opposite syndrome right now. She came home and she was like, I'm sorry. And I was like, why are you sorry? She said, I bumped the baby up against the wall because I didn't realize I was so fat. I was like,
oh, God.
It's fine. You're fine.
You're like, honey, you know,
you're not.
They used to be, you know, hunter-gatherers and would deal with, like, lots worse than bumping into a wall.
The long and the short of it is, even though we tend to think of us, we tend to think of the me as living behind our eyes.
Right.
I don't think people really appreciate how much the me is shaped by the body.
Although, when I say, you know, I'm talking about me, I tap myself in the chest. I don't tap myself between the forehead.
It's true.
That's very valid. That's very, very true. Yeah. That's why I
do two
say,
thumbs. Like, straight up.
Yeah.
That's why I think we tend to think of the me as the head and torso.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it's a lot of the emotion. We think of the mind as here. Mm-hmm. We always think of our emotions as being in the torso.
Yeah.
You know,
they are, though. That's what's interesting. I mean, a lot of them, when you have...
Well, the physiological aspects are, yeah.
Exactly. When you have emotional reactions to things, if you do any form of meditation and you really start to break down emotions, what you pay attention to is... And it's not just the torso. I mean, you'll feel it, like, in your arms. You know, if you get tingles,
mm-hmm.
you know, or chills, you might feel it in your arms. But... Much of the emotional things that you feel, you'll feel it in the pit of your stomach. You'll feel it in your heart beating quickly. You'll feel it, you know, just that nausea that happens in your stomach in general.
And I was speaking with someone who does energy work, right? Yeah. The concept of moving energy around your body as
Reiki.
A healing thing, Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was talking about was like the centers of emotional energy that are in the stomach. Right. And so I mentioned to him, well, I mean, I'm having gastric bypass. They're moving my stomach. What does that mean? And he basically looked at me and said, you know, I have absolutely no idea.
Hmm.
You know, when you change the organs, I don't know if the energy flow moves with them or.
Well, I would imagine eventually.
I'm rewriting the energy captain.
We need more dilithium crystals.
Scotty to do my operation.
I mean,
rock.
As a general rule. I mean, just from a certain perspective, I mean, you know, it's going to be disharmonizing. I mean, you're going to be kind of screwed up for a little while until things start to heal. I mean, that would, you know, it's exactly what you would expect.
Same thing.
Well, yeah, but is that because of a physiological thing, or is that because some, you know,
because your chakras,
Eastern energy flow has been
well,
like my chakras and my dharma now.
First of all, it depends on whether or not you believe in energy and believe that it moves through the body. And that,
well, if energy is real, doesn't it affect you whether you believe in it or not?
Well, I think so. I think so, but that doesn't mean everyone thinks so.
Right.
But yeah, the answer would be it's both. You know, I mean, there's a connection between the two, you know.
Fascinating.
Well, as we wrap up the topic, let me pose one last question to each of you.
Okay.
If you were to lose a body part,
what
is the body part that you would most be willing to sacrifice?
Do we have to pick a big body part? Can we pick something like a
It can't be a pinky. It's got to be an arm, a leg, an organ, your ears, and the senses that come with it.
Fuck.
I think in today's modern day, with all the things they have, it seems to me like, you know, the leg or a piece of the leg seems the least detrimental. People move around really well. We see people who run.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah, I would do that over arm.
I would definitely do that.
Would
over
you lose
arm.
Hearing over losing a?
I've actually
lose a sense over a limb.
I don't know.
No, I would lose a limb first.
Well, for me, the absolute worst thing would be to be a quadriplegic. That scares the crap out of me.
Me too.
Yeah, of
course. Scares the absolute living crap out of me. But, yeah, I think I would lose sight before hearing, definitely.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
I've heard that more people when they lose their hearing, they're higher suicide rates in deafness and like that because you're treated in terms of society completely differently. If you're blind, people can recognize the fact that you're blind and you're treated still as a member of society. If you're deaf, people just look at you and they go, oh, well, you know, what's wrong with you? And you start, that's why, you know.
I'm sorry. I'm a visual person. I can't.
That would probably be the last thing I'd want to lose.
For me, it's also a lot about music. Like, I can't lose a hand. The inability to play my musical instruments would absolutely shatter me. Would the inability to play the violin, to play the guitar, play the piano would just
play
kill
the piano
me.
With one hand.
Yeah, sure.
Your feet
ding, 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 ding.
It's like half a chopstick.
It's happened.
I don't know. I'd pick like a leg, I guess.
I don't know.
Any thoughts, Peter?
Kidney?
Like, oh, absolutely, like.
Leg.
Very clear.
I suppose a leg, kind of.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to go with leg, too.
Well, before we also...
I'd go with nose if it wasn't for the cosmetic aspect.
Well, if anybody who wants to actually sever lots of limbs, go get Dead Space, the video game, because the creatures can only be killed if you actually sever the limbs off of them. Body
they
shots...
don't actually die. They
body
just
shots
there.
Don't count.
Oh, really?
You gotta actually blow off the limbs. That's crazy.
So, oh,
and they're moving all around. You gotta shoot them off.
Yeah. And if you want to know more about the science of this, definitely go listen to the Where Am I episode of Radiolab, because they go... V.S. Ramachandran, who's neuropsychologist, goes into it. Fascinating.
We'll put some links on our website about different aspects. Excuse me. Different aspects, including, like, there's a great article about the Catholic Church's viewpoints on donating body parts and that type of stuff. It's pretty interesting. So we'll put a couple links up for that.
Excellent.
But before we stop the show, Smarty Librarian has agreed to hopefully do it maybe once a month or so.
Is this Smarty Librarian from our awesome forums at www.geekson.com?
It is. She's decided she's going to give us a little geek lit bit every once in a while, since she's a librarian, gets a hold of books.
Isn't that what we call baby geeks too?
Baby geeks?
Geeklets?
Geeklets.
Oh, I don't know. She's a pretty big geek.
Never mind.
She's going to... this is her pilot episode. She did a little three-minute thing, and she decided that starting with talking about some classic... geek lit horror and geek lit science fiction would be a good starting episode. So this is her first Smarty Librarian geek lit.
Smarty's talking.
Exactly.
Hello, fellow geeklings. I'm your friendly neighborhood Smarty Librarian. Are the fundamentals of the economy getting you down? Don't have the money to spend on the latest bestseller? If so, now might be the perfect time to head down to your local library to check out some classic books from years past. Because when the future is scary, there can be something comforting about knowing that the past was kind of scary too. But before you head off into another scary place, the library card catalog, here's something to keep in mind. Human nature doesn't change. And the classic sci-fi and fantasy books are the ones that take this into account, because technology gets dated really fast. And yeah, you can read some of these books with the jaded eye of a 21st century denizen and say, ugh, I could solve all these problems with some antibiotics and a cell phone. But isn't that really missing the point? Because it's not about the technology, which, yes, could be cool or could be kind of corny. It's about our relationship with technology and some of the lessons that we can draw from Drs. Jekyll and Frankenstein are still relevant today. And one last warning before you get out your scrap paper and golf pencils. A lot of these images from these books have really entered into our cultural vocabulary, but the originals may not be what you're expecting. I mean, Grimm's fairy tales are a lot grimmer than Disney portrays, and Herman Munster really has nothing on Frankenstein's monster. So, that said, onto the list. For those of us without a lot of time on our hands, which is probably most of us, short stories are a great way to go. You have your Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft, classic horror writers. They both have collections with the Library of America, which is a great series. You have E.T.A. Hoffman, who is a German horror writer. You have Grimm Brothers and Hans Christian Andersen, some more gloomy Northern Europeans. Hans Christian Andersen and the Grimm Brothers both have excellent collections edited by Maria Tater, and she has compiled really wonderful footnotes and introductory essays for some of these tales. Really great reads if you can find them. On to novels, some classic horror novels, Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson. I like the theme of doubles, as you can tell. Then you have your vampire stuff. Carmela by Le Fanu is one of the earliest. It's actually a lesbian vampire story, for those of us who like that kind of thing. And then Bram Stoker's Dracula, but remember, try not to think of Keanu. You also have your whimsical mathematical books, Alice in Wonderland, Lewis Carroll, and Flatland. And you have the very first real American fantasy story, which is The Wizard of Oz, and the sequel books, L. Frank Baum. And The Wizard of Oz remains one of my favorite books of all time. It's really worth taking a look at without, you know, all the Judy Garland baggage attached with it. And I'll leave you in the 1950s, sort of with the emergence of the modern genres. And of course, we all know Lord of the Rings really kick-started the modern fantasy genre. But in the sci-fi end of things, there's a couple books which I think really are, if you want to get to the roots of sort of modern sci-fi, you have Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov with the Foundation series, which I think really began sort of the sociological sci-fi. And then, of course, 1984 by George Orwell, which is one of those books where, you know, 1984, it really doesn't seem all that far away with warrantless wiretapping and everything else going on. So that's it for me for now. I'm sure everyone has been yelling out the names of their favorite books, and feel free to email me with further suggestions or maybe things that you think I haven't read, because I love a good book. And yeah, back to you, boys.
All right. Anything else before we should wrap this whole crazy thing up?
No, I think that's everything.
That is it. Have a happy, happy Halloween, folks. Go to our forums at geeksOn.com and post shots of your Halloween costumes, because you know we love that stuff.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Share with us your Halloween tricks and treats and all that sort of awesomeness. And if you are interested...
Worldwide?
Sorry?
Is Halloween worldwide?
I don't think so. Though it's celebrated now in a lot of different forms.
It's my favorite holiday. Absolutely my favorite holiday.
It's a good holiday.
Yeah. It's like the gay Christmas.
Well, it's...
Why?
Don't judge me. No, it's, but yeah, I love Halloween because it's the last one that's the creative holiday. It's not
it
about
is.
It's not about giving other people a lot of stuff or giving yourself a lot of stuff. It's just about your bringing out your inner id.
My mother had a friend who was like a psychiatrist, and he was I met him on a Halloween night. And he said, "I always thought Halloween was strange. It was, you know, everyone dressed up about, you know, dressed up in something they just aren't." And I went, "Really? I think it's the one day that people are finally dressed up as the probably the closest thing to their personality, instead of walking around in suits or designer clothes that was made by somebody else. Finally, for once, we get to see what their personality is." Yeah. And he just looked at me like, "I think you're right."
Nice. I like that.
So anyway, dress like a slut evening is coming up soon. So.
Sexy frog, sexy fireman. Sexy
Exactly.
So if you like what you heard, you want to drop us a line, or if you hate what you heard and you want to drop Matt a line, you can write us at geeks@geekson.com or any one of us individually, Aaron, Peter, Matt, or Don, at geekson.com.
Exactly.
So come on back now, you hear?
All righty. Bye, everybody.
Have a great geek week. Geek it out.
Rock it out.
I don't know.
We'll be right back.